This is Kevin Maynard with Quad City Arts. Welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today I'm talking art with Pono and Sean of Kula Evie. Kula Evie will be coming to the Quad Cities as part of the Quad City Arts Visiting Artist Series and will perform at the Sound Conservatory on October 3rd at 7 p.m. Tickets available at quadcityarts.com. Pono and Sean, welcome to Talking Art.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So you both will be part of the group coming to the Quad Cities, and you'll be coming here to perform in our schools as well as do an evening performance. So being with Quad City Arts and our Visiting Artist Series, I want to dive into first, what can the students and teachers expect to see in the schools as well as to learn in the schools?
We are really excited to be able to visit the schools in your area. We're going to talk a little bit about Hawaiian culture and Hawaiian language. We'll do a little bit of showcase of some hula. I'm a hula dancer, and I'm super lucky to get to dance to the music that these guys make. So a little bit of hula, a little bit of music. We're also going to talk about the history of Hawaiian language and teach some songs as well as some Hawaiian words.
Excellent. Excellent. And so real quick, before we go any further, it's not just you two in the group. Can you talk a little about who makes up that group?
Yeah. So it's myself, Sean Pimentel, and as well as Kavika Kahiapu, who's from Hunananiho Waimanalo, and Lehua Kalima Alvarez, who's originally from Keokaha, Hilo, Hawaii, or Ramuko Kiawe, the Big Island of Hawaii, as most people call it. So the three of us are the musicians, and Pono Fernandez is our hula practitioner. So she comes and shares, the motions and the stories behind our mele, our songs. But, Pono also works in the Department of Education back here in Hawaii, in the Office of Hawaiian Education, which oversees all of our Hawaiian immersion schools. And so we are repatriating our language, our culture, and teaching our keiki from really, really young ages, from preschool all the way all up, and immersing them in Hawaiian language. So having Pono, who has an educational background, makes us look smarter.
I love that. And what's the instrumentation of the group?
We actually come with three guitars.
Oh,
so we're all multi-instrumentalists. But we do alternate tunings as well. So Kavika does what we call kihoalu, or Hawaiian slack key. So he does it's almost like a drop C tuning. And then I do like a drop D tuning. And Lehua does like a standard tuning as well. And so it's just kind of a really cool mishmash of guitars. But, the range of tunings makes it sound very nice and full. So you don't really need a bass player.
Mm. Excellent. And so what can audiences expect at the night performance?
Well, the three of us will come out and share, stories of our people, of our history that are written through the mele, through the songs. And we like to talk about things that have happened with our people from even pre-contact, before the missionaries came over, and take them on this journey of what happened through, through our voyages, through the canoes that came all through Polynesia, how we ended up in Hawaii, and then also post-contact, how that affected us, along with, businesses coming to Hawaii and things like, land rights, water rights, language rights, all those sorts of things, and educate them, through mele, which we feel is very important, especially nowadays. There's so many ways of sharing your culture and sharing your message, but we feel that when we do it through mele and through hula, that people perceive it in a different way. Mm-hmm. We can touch them, we can touch their hearts, we can touch their minds, their spirits, and share these messages in such a beautiful way that people receive them, much better.
Yeah. And, you know, we hope to, by sharing these stories, we hope to start conversations. You know, we were lucky enough to record an album in 2021. And that album, we took that album on tour to the West Coast and, you know, to our friends in Japan. We're blessed, you know, to have our music heard all over the world. And that very next year, our album won at the Nahoku Hanohano Awards, like the Hawaiian version of the Grammys. We took home Album of the Year, Group of the Year, Hawaiian Album of the Year. And really, you know, we don't do music for the awards. We do it to share our message. And so at a live show, we're really excited because we not only do people get to hear the music, but they get to hear the stories that go along with that music. And so it's really being able to experience music in multiple different ways, you know, the auditory piece of it, the visual art of hula, and then to get to understand, you know, where that story came from, who wrote the song. That's just as important, we think, as the beauty of the mele itself. So we love doing live shows and sharing those stories.
Yeah. And then excellent. Matching it up with the hula as well, you know, puts the pictures to the music. So. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, Sean and Pono, I'd like to sort of take a step back in time, back in your careers. How did both of you get started performing?
I was raised through music. My father's a musician as well, and I'm actually a drummer. So my parents put me in drum lessons when I was 6 years old. Just took a liking to drumming. So I learned how to read music. Went through private school here. It's a big Native Hawaiian private school here called Kamehameha Schools. And we had, you know, great band and orchestra and choral programs there. So I partook of all those things from elementary time and actually, you know, played the trombone and the clarinet and played the cello and, you know, went to choral music. Of course, everyone here plays the ukulele and, you know, guitar, and it's just part of a culture to pick up every instrument and do that. We didn't really play, you know, many video games back in our days. So, just, you know, raised in music. Every party, every get together, every gathering that we have has music. It's just a way that we connect. And so it took me through high school, into college, marched in the marching band. And started playing professionally actually in high school and hanging out in recording studios. Worked. So my background is I've produced many, albums, toured with many of these well-known artists from Hawaii and abroad as well, as musical director, as a producer, as a manager, as all kinds of things. And so this band we put together a few years ago, and Pona can tell you about her hula background as well.
Yeah, it's funny when most people ask when I started dancing hula, I say that before I could walk, you know, I started to learn my passion for hula from my mother and my grandmother, who were both hula dancers. And it turns out I'm a fifth generation hula dancer. Wow. Which is pretty amazing. You know, there's this is something that we'll talk about, you know, in our schools, but a lot of our culture was either lost or went underground for a period of time. And so, you know, even the stories of our ancestors' culture is just, it's hard to find in your own genealogy. And so that came out very recently that, you know, my great-grandmothers, great-great-grandmothers were hula dancers. And so just really honored to be able to continue that tradition. So I formally started dancing hula when I was 6. Prior to that was, following along with my mother and grandmother as we'd listen to music at home, and been dancing ever since. It's a passion of mine. And I'm really thankful to be able to share that on the road, you know, away from home as well.
Excellent. So this is actually something I wanted to talk to you a little bit about. Is I had a conversation recently where somebody described hula as like the hula culture. And it was the first time that I, you know, had thought about it as more than just a dance or a dance form. And so I found the conversation really interesting. So Pono, I was wondering if maybe you could expand upon that and talk a little bit about like the hula culture versus just, you know, what most people think of as, you know, hula dancing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think hula culture actually can mean many different things. But, you know, it really is, it started as a lifestyle. I believe, you know, our art form of hula was very ceremonial. It was, you know, prior to Western contact, that's how we communicated with our gods, you know, our elements. It's the manifestation of how we, you know, found ways to survive. And so, you know, you bring hula into the modern day and it's gone through so much. You know, we definitely had that Hollywood hula era with the grass skirts and coconut bras and all of that. We also, there's the Merry Monarch competition is also very prominent worldwide. It's like our, what do we call it? The Super Bowl of hula that happens every year. And so I think when, you know, hula culture can be this really broad term of what hula has gone through over the years, its evolution over the years. But I think for us, especially, you know, because I do come from hula people that have experienced that, you know, that have grown up in different eras of hula. For us, what we really want to share is that hula culture is definitely more than just a movement. I cannot dance without the music. I cannot dance without the words that the song is sharing, because my choreography is attached to the meaning of the story. You know, you could dance hula to any kind of music, really, but for us, it's about telling this story so that other people might feel that story a little bit deeper. So I think, you know, when I think of what hula culture means to me and means to us, it really is that appropriate demonstration of a piece of our culture that's so, so, so important. You know, we have to be careful about what we pass on to the next generations. And so how we dance, is important. We want to dance hula responsibly. I also think that it's important for folks to know that there are many genealogies of hula. We say at home, "A'ole po ka ike ikahala ho kahi." Not all knowledge is stored in one school. So you'll have many, many, many different schools of hula here in Hawaii and across the world too, that come from their own hula teachers. My form of hula might be a little bit different from someone else's, and we're not going to say that it's wrong, you know, because my kumu learned from their kumu, who learned from their kumu. There's a genealogy of how we dance hula. And so, in fact, you know, one of the songs that Kula'iwi might sing, I have a particular choreography for it because I see and feel and hear that mele in a particular way. And another halau might have different choreography. We could get up at the same time and dance the same song, and the choreography will look different and beautiful in both ways, in many ways.
Excellent. I love that. And I really love that saying. I really do. So you've kind of sort of touched on this a little bit. You've talked about how, you know, this is, you know, a way to sort of pass this down and to, you know, share your culture and sort of share it with the next generation. And so, you know, there's obviously, I'm sure that there's a lot of that you're doing in your home state. What I'm curious about is obviously you are coming here to the Quad Cities. And so we're sort of exploring this and sharing this with our community. And that's, you know, that's sort of something a little bit different. So I'm curious from both of you, what has made you want to share your culture sort of with everyone and, you know, sort of maybe in the same light, share that with the next generation as well?
One of the big reasons we love doing this is to inspire and to educate, especially about our history. I think a lot of people that have visited, or even not visited, but their idea of what Hawaii is paradise. You know, come here and drink cold drinks out of pineapples and see hula dancers on the beach and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Really is this glorification of Hawaii that was, you know, put in the movies and on TV in order to help sell tourism and to get people to come here. Like many other indigenous people now, we're trying to re-educate. There's a lot of our history that has been lost through this education from an American standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes this is a difficult conversation to have. And again, not from an angry standpoint or perspective, but to say, hey, you know what? You've heard the other side of what our history might have meant to you, but this is our side, you know, our natives, our native tongue, our native stories being told by natives. And so to be able to go around and then sing our songs and share our culture and then say, hey, you know, by the way, when you come to Hawaii, go and visit the palace, you know, go and visit these sacred spaces, because this is what it means to us. And so a lot of our history that's been taught in the schools, even to myself, you know, even to us, it was written, you know, from a different perspective. It wasn't written from a native perspective. So even taught to the natives, we were taught from an outside perspective of what happened to our people. And so we really want to go out and re-educate people on what happened. The overthrow, you know, our queen being imprisoned, you know, losing land, losing water rights, losing our language, all these things. But it's a very painful past for us. And what we do, instead of just focusing on all the pain, we celebrate our people and try to show everyone the beauty in our culture through dance and through hula. And being able to travel around the world and share this with people and see the change, you can see it in their faces, you know, when we start to tell these stories. And again, we can't teach you everything in 1 hour or even in a 3-minute song. So what we try to do is we encourage and we inspire them by giving them these little nuggets of ike or wisdom to go, hey, go and Google this. You know, on the way home, you'll have a conversation. It's like when you leave a movie, you'll have that conversation with your partner and go, wow, you know that part in the movie, you know, or when they said this or when they sang about this. And it sparks these conversations. And that's how change occurs. And that's really what we want to do is I mean, in this world is so crazy right now. And all we can do is come and bring some aloha.
Yeah, Sean, that I think you've just like perfectly summed up what I love about our Quad City Arts Present series, is that we try to choose artists to perform in that series for that exact notion of sparking conversation of, you know, ideally when they leave the venue that they're talking about something that they learned or something that they didn't know. So sparking conversation is sort of, you know, what we do and what we're most excited about.
Awesome. That's beautiful. You know, I'm not the educational person. This is one of the smart ones. She's the one with the master's and getting her PhD in Hawaiian literature right now. You know, I'm the musician, and I feel that my calling in life is to take these stories, and she's a published author, you know, and to take these stories, and she's read way more books than I've ever written that I can even dream of reading. I only read books and pictures, but the stories that she shares with me, I can take those things and put them into songs and tell those stories. And I feel that's really my strength, is to be the storyteller through music. And she's a storyteller through hula. And the other two are just amazing songwriters and singers as well. Oh, yeah. Their voices are so classic here. Everyone knows their voices here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as a family, we travel along together and love to inspire these conversations with people, and especially connect with other indigenous cultures as well. So when we go on the road, you know, we'll sit with First Nations people, with Native Americans, with Japanese, with Chinese, and everywhere that we go, I will sit and play music, share stories, and we'll see all these similarities. And that's really what we want to bring together, you know, through music and hula, is to create these conversations of similarities, how we are more alike with each other rather than not alike, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's, it's also important to note that this idea of music and, you know, generating sound, you know, from your mouth, is something so ancient. It's this, you know, our ancestors were doing a version of this for thousands of years, you know, and that's how they remembered their stories. Our ancestors would chant genealogies. You know, you have to memorize, how do you best memorize 1,000 lines of genealogy? You chant them. You know, the rhythm and the sound that those words make when you're chanting. They say that chanting is your first medicine. It heals your body. And so now to be able to do a version of that, you know, we still chant in our ancient ways, but to put those words to music in this way. And, you know, Sean, as the music practitioner, will be able to give the technological language of all of that. But for me as a dancer, I feel it. I can feel it in my body. And then I can remember these songs that much better because I have the melody for it. And we know that music touches people in ways that is that we can't make sense of, right? And so to be able to share these stories and these sentiments in a multi-pronged way, you know, to have it touch their heart and spirit, and then to see the movement, and then, you know, we're singing in a language that majority of the people in the audience won't know, but you can still feel it. And then by hearing those stories, you're going to go home and be like, okay, I got to learn more about this. Or when I come to Hawaii, I want to be as respectful as I can and understand the backstory and how do I contribute to this space rather than take away from it. So that really is our goal. And and to connect with people, to share similar stories, and then really find ways to heal the world, you know, through our shared experiences and indigenous knowledge.
Our language was just a spoken language pre-contact, you know, it wasn't written at all. And so when missionaries came here, they started to teach people how to write, read and write. And because through the voyages, we had to remember everything from our genealogies to how we got here to, you know, all of our ancient traditions. And so it was passed down through chants. And so we have two different types of hula: kahiko, which is our ancient hula, and then our awana, which is our more modern hula, which is done more to like ukulele and guitar and more melodic sort of post-contact music. Mm-hmm. But, you know, before the kahiko hula was, the hula kahiko is done just to like pahu, which is drums, to the ipu, to just implements, or just to the voice, just to the oli, the chant itself. But like Pono said, you know, the chanting, it creates vibrations that are healing. You know, the implements, we believe, create vibrations that are healing. The chant is actually, we're trying to emulate the sounds that our ancestors heard, you know, whether they be in the forest, whether they be in the ocean,
volcanoes,
yeah, what the land sounds like, you know, if you really listen. And that's what we encourage the keiki, the kids, to go outside, right, and be out in nature and listen to what's going on around them, to connect with nature. But we shouldn't say to connect, but to stay connected.
Yeah.
Mm. We have all these devices now and everyone's connected to their phone. If you can imagine if kids were connected so much to the aina, to the land, and to the ocean, to the kai, to the vai, to all these things, as much as they're connected to their phones, how beautiful this world would be, you know. And so we encourage that. We have aina-based learning, which is we take the kids out of the classroom. We put them out in the lo'i with the kalo, with the taro, pulling, you know, making poi, planting, harvesting, things, fishing. You know, that's Hawaiian science, right?
Yeah.
That's how we teach. So that's all in the music. That's what our chants talk about.
Wow. I love that. Pono, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here, because Sean mentioned that you were studying Hawaiian literature.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, being an avid reader, I would like to know, is there a book or a couple of books that you're like, this is what I would recommend to somebody who wants to know more about Hawaiian culture, or maybe just like, this is just a good Hawaiian story or Hawaiian storyteller?
Oh my gosh, that's like awesome.
I know.
Being a favorite child. Well, one of the books that I recommend to everyone is Hawaii's Story by Hawaii's Queen. It's actually written by our queen, Queen Liliʻuokalani, and she writes about the illegal overthrow of the Hawaiian kingdom from her perspective, which is amazing. You know, to be able to read and understand what she was going through at that time, the decisions that she was forced to make, and then the decision, you know, that she made for the good of our people. I think it puts into perspective a lot of what happened and kind of the generational trauma that we experience now. What else? There are there's a book. Well, Sean said I'm a published author, and the book that we just put out is called An Ocean of Wonder. And it's not just specific to Hawaii. It's there are many authors from all of Oceania, Polynesia, Micronesia, Melanesia. And it's a series of articles. There's some beautiful art in there. There's fiction, nonfiction, from a contemporary perspective about what our people are experiencing, what we hope to see in the world in the future. It's a pretty incredible anthology that I really don't believe that there's anything quite like it out besides that book. So, you know, you have your perspective of the queen, and then you have writings from what's going on today to really kind of bridge, you know, our experiences as Hawaii, as people of Oceania too.
Perfect. I was that actually works out perfect, because I was going to ask you, you know, where we could read your work. So, well, excellent. So real quick, I do want to touch a little bit on Kula Ivi. How did the group come together? And then also we probably should talk about what Kula Ivi means.
Oh, sure. I'll start with what Kula Ivi means. So Kula Ivi means native lands. It literally means the land where my ancestors' bones are buried. Our ancestors, of course, we like any culture, you know, we carry them close to our hearts. We believe in our culture that we carry our ancestors on our back. So everywhere we go, they're with us. They're always watching over us. They're protecting us. They're also keeping us in line too. But, you know, the bones are so sacred to us. We believe that, especially after someone passes, you know, to be able to take their bones, you can take their mana, you can take their spirit. And so when we buried very high-ranking chiefs or chiefesses, we always had to, like, really protect how we buried them. There's stories of some of our great chiefs that whoever was chosen to bury their bones, they would wrap them up in kapa, which is a bark that's pounded into like cloth,
yeah,
you know, and wrapped very, very delicately. And these chosen people would rappel off the side of a mountain and, you know, go into a cave, put the bones inside there, and then cut the rope and fall to their death so that no one knew where they were buried. That's how important and sacred, yeah, the bones are, because if the bones got into the wrong hands, we believe that, you know, that mana could be taken and used for, you know, not so good things, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so knowing, you know, where the bones of your ancestors, where your ancestors come from, is paramount, you know, knowing your space, your land. And the hard thing about, and one of the reasons why we call our group Kula Ivi, is that there are not many people here in Hawaii that are able to live on the land where their ancestors grew up. Mm. You know, the cost of living and whatnot here in Hawaii is so atrociously high that we barely are able to raise generations on the same land. On land at all. And so, you know, being kind of knowing where your Kula Ivi is, knowing where that land is right now, that's all, most of us, that's all we have is knowing where our family is from. And many of us don't even know that. So for us, it was really important to, you know, when we're making this album and putting this group together, is that this is our foundation, is knowing where we're from, and so that we can tell our stories in the most pono, the most appropriate ways. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to say about these three, about Sean, Lehua, and Kavika, they're household names here in Hawaii, all three of them. And, you know, they've all done recordings, you know, on their, well, this is actually Sean's first recording as an artist, which is really exciting. He prefers to be the backup guy, but Sean and Lehua and Kavika, very, very well known as lead singers, as well as musicians that have played, you know, all over here in Hawaii. And Sean produced Lehua's solo album. He was playing with Lehua's group prior, and then produced her solo album. And the two of them had to go out and promote that album. So he was playing music with her. So the two of them as a duo for quite some time. And, you know, the both of them really love Kavika and have worked with Kavika for many, many years. And so it was really natural. They kept calling him like, hey, we want to do this song. Can you add some guitar to it? We really like the sound of your guitar. And we thought, hey, let's go out on the road, you know, Sean and Lehua and then Kavika's band, you know, playing together. And then all of a sudden it was like, why don't we just put a group together? Why don't we just do this all together? Because we're playing on each other's music. We're writing for one another. And so, yeah, I want to celebrate the three of them because they're so incredibly talented and they're not going to say it themselves. But, you know, and then you get the three of them as a band, and it's just amazing. You know, you'll feel it again, that thing about music that we can't explain, but that you can feel when they open their mouths and sing in harmony. It's like, what just happened?
Yeah. Lehua's, in fact, they just celebrated their 40th anniversary of the group that she sang with since high school. Not saying how old she is, but you know, you could probably do the math. Yeah, there was just a sold out concert that we all played at this past weekend here in Hawaii. And the name of the group is Naleo Pili Mihana. And the three girls that are in that group, they won a talent contest in high school. And it was a statewide talent contest. And then they went on to become the top selling
female band
from Hawaii.
Yeah.
And they've sold many, 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 many albums.
And they probably hold the record for awards in Hawaii.
So Lehua comes from that background, and she's just a fabulous, phenomenal songwriter.
Beautiful.
Kavika has played, just like me, Kavika and I have backed up many, many artists here. And he's an amazing solo artist as well, has many albums. And so me coming from the producing standpoint, I was like, you know, recording the albums and putting the bands together. But finally I said, you know what, I'm going to jump in the fire and do this together. So wrote some songs and we recorded them, and can't wait for you to hear them. But the other thing too that's very important to us is everyone always treats the hula as like an adornment to the music. You know, they always go, oh, it's so pretty. Oh, and they have, you know, a hula. But for us, it's not an addition. You know, Pono really is a member of the band because we feel that the hula is the other half to the mele. It's the other half to the song. And it's not complete without the hula. Many of our songs are written for hula, and that's the intention. Mm-hmm. And it's not just so that you have a pretty dancer, you know, making all these motions on stage, but it really completes the whole meaning behind the song. And when you see it, you'll see, you know, many people think that hula is just like a spontaneous sort of like dance and you're flailing your arms and things like that, but it really is well choreographed. It really is something that's very precise. It's like martial arts, something that you have to study for many years. You think that you can just jump up there and do it, but after doing it, you go, this is really hard. And to do it well is very, very difficult. So I can't wait for people to come and see, you know, just the whole package put together of Kula'iwi.
Excellent. Well, I am very excited to host you. I mean, we're really looking forward to it. Before I let you two go, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience?
Gosh, we're just really happy to come and celebrate, you know, our culture and our people with the people of Chicago. I was just there a little while ago. We were there during the Democratic National Convention. We did a fundraiser for Maui, raising money for Maui for the wildfires. It's been a little over a year and they're still rebuilding, still having to raise money, still a lot of families in need. And so I was there with another artist a few weeks ago, and it's just such a beautiful place. You know, Chicago is such a historic place, and to be, you know, in that space and learn more about the natives there that were there before what's there now. You know, that's really how we like to connect with that space. We like to come there and celebrate your Aina, you know, your land, paying homage to those that have come before, to ask permission to be there so that we can be celebratory in that space and be there with permission as well. So we're really excited to have everyone there, especially the keiki, you know, to have all the kids come out. And it's not easy getting up in front of 100 kids. Again, Pono's the teacher. She's taught for so many years at the university and things, but, you know, kids are different. You know, we have kids as well, so we know, you know.
Yeah.
But to get up there and we're not there to entertain them, but we're in there to keep them engaged.
Yeah.
And so if we have to stand on our head, it's a song, you know, for them to remember something so that they can take it home. And teach their parents. That's really, I think, the beauty of this is we teach them these things and they go home and they tell their parents and they teach their parents and their parents come back and tell the teachers. And we get this feedback of our kids came home and they taught us this whole thing, what they learned. And it's just amazing. And that's how change occurs.
And we're just really thankful to be able to share our story wherever we go and, you know, to have this opportunity to, you know, like Sean said, the both of us didn't grow up knowing a lot of our culture, especially our generation, especially is the one that's caught in the gap of, you know, of that generational trauma of our ancestors not wanting to pass on shame to us because they were made to be shamed. For their culture, for their language. And so, you know, our generation is the one that's really finding our way back for the future generations. And so we really want to afford that opportunity, you know, even if this culture isn't something that these students are going to be living on a day-to-day basis, we hope that some of the lessons that we teach about, you know, caring for land, caring for water, understanding that our footprints leave an impact no matter what we do. And so what kind of impact are you going to leave behind? That's something that, you know, we've learned over the years that if anything, you know, we hope that people can walk away from our conversations with them, you know, knowing that. And again, just curious to ask more stories and encourage them to learn about Indigenous names and spaces, you know, of the place that you all mm-hmm. are living on now. And yeah, it's just really exciting to think of a future that's grounded in that kind of way of knowing. And maybe we had a small part in that. So yeah. We're excited.
We're excited to connect with you, Kevin, yeah. with you know, other practitioners that want to come out and teach us. Because we're always open to learning things, you know, and connecting that way. So please come out and bring some Ike, some knowledge for us as well. And, you know, teach us something as well.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Pono, Sean, I'm looking forward to meeting you both in person. And I am looking forward to learning from both of you as well as the rest of Kula Ivi. So thank you again for being my guest today on Talking Art.
Thank
Mahalo,
you.
Kevin.
Mahalo.
We'll see you soon. Yeah. Malama Pono. Take care.
See you soon.
Thank you again to Quad City Bank and Trust for supporting Talking Art. You can see Kula Ivi on October 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Sound Conservatory as part of the Quad City Arts Presents series. For more information on Kula Ivi, you can check out their website, kulaivimusic.com. That's K-U-L-A-I-W-I music.com. I'm going to go ahead and hit stop here.